and welcome to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bobby Nock. On this week's show, taking healthcare concerns directly to Cape Breton's Liberal cabinet ministers. We'll listen in on a protest at Glace Bay MLA Jeff McClellan's office. We'll also talk to an organizer of the sit-in and get some analysis from political scientist Jim Guy. And we wrap up the show with a plea from the legislature's new health committee. The group Capers for Healthcare recently took its concerns directly to Glace Bay MLA Jeff McClellan. More than 100 people gathered outside McClellan's Commercial Street office for a sit-in. Police were on scene to provide security over concerns about the effect of the protest on other tenants in the People's Mall. A handful of people were allowed inside the office where McClellan's Liberal cabinet colleague and Sydney Whitney Pier MLA Derek Mumbercat was also on hand. Mumbercat and McClellan later came outside to talk to the crowd.
So thanks for that. I appreciate it. And folks, what I said indoors a couple times, and it was hot, obviously, in the beginning, but we got to a place where we could have a conversation before coming out here. Everything I say, and I can attest for Derek, and he can speak for himself. But I'm not using talking points. I'm not reading from a script that somebody gave me. This is the number one issue. I don't care about votes, and I don't care about politics. But let me the bottom line is, this is the most important issue for Glace Bay, Cape Breton, and Nova Scotians. That is not lost.
We already know that. We need
doctors. We need doctors really badly, guys. So
you turn them down when they want to come in.
I don't know that any specifics how we turn doctors down. I'm not sure that.
Read the paper, Jeff. Speak to family doctors. People want to be here.
You went to Sydney.
Yeah.
To talk about the closures of the New Waterford Hospital and of the Northside Hospital, and you did not come to our communities.
Yay.
And I think my residents, and I think the residents of the Northside deserve to hear from you on their territory, in their communities, because they're the ones who are suffering. I know, I've been through the system. I went through the system in March, and I went through the system in August with a miscarriages. It was hell. It was pure and utter hell. And you want to know something? What I saw? I saw nurses who could barely sit down. I saw crowded hospital rooms. I saw crowded hallways. I saw doctors run off their feet. I saw points where they couldn't even take any more of us back in the back room. That's in the situation we are in.
For sure, yeah.
And so I think my residents deserve to know what they're in for, because what we're in for right now, we've seen it. We've seen when New Waterford closes. We've seen when Glace Bay closes. We've seen when Northside closes. We've already seen it. It's the system of chaos.
Yeah.
And it's a system that we deserve to be heard from. And I want my community to hear from you. So what you're going to do, what this government is going to do. We deserve an absolute plan. We need to know. And the second thing is, well, we need to know it. We are the residents. We're the ones who are on the ground. We need to know what's going to happen.
Now. We need to know now.
Dr. Jeff, and you're well taken care of.
Okay, guys, in 2012, NDP, Dexter, Corbett, government went to New Waterford. They closed our ER department. They gave us this new model of CEC. Dr. Littlejohn, Frank Corbett, a bunch of healthcare workers went to the UK for a week. They're going to look at the new CEC model of healthcare. It was a disaster over there at the time. It's a disaster here. Basically, in short, it was proven in the UK with the new 811 system, the very old, the mentally ill, and the homeless will not use an 811 system. So you've eliminated a tremendous amount of your people that you need healthcare with. Now, what they did is they put the CEC in the north side, they put the CEC in New Waterford. It's failing misery out there. After 7 o'clock, the hospitals are basically locked up. What they've done the last couple of years is they have taken the doctors from Glace Bay who have an emergency center, and they're shipping them all into the regional because they're short. So what's happening is there's 21 inpatients at New Waterford. After 7 o'clock, it's emergency care, CEC, where they dial the 811. North Sydney has about 51, and the hospital here in North Sydney has been closed. Now, what's happening here, there's more than just a Liberal problem, it's an NDP problem, it's a government problem where politicians, and you guys hold the majority vote here. You two Cape Bretoners could change every bit of this for us people. Where you'll be reoffering in 4 years, I really hope you're paying attention to the people here, because like Kendra said, we're a small community. Now, just to further this, a year and a half ago, you came out with David Weldon and the Premier and announced we were going to get a new community health center in addition to our hospital, and keep our hospital as it is, status quo. Take off, annex the old guards, turn some changes around. And less than a year and a half later, who comes out but McNeil saying he's closing our hospital, going to enhance the CECs. Guys, the CEC in the UK was disastrous. It's disastrous here in Cape Breton. Right now they have lab services. My wife works 30 years there, Jeff. At 7 o'clock, she used to take calls. She had 30 minutes to get in and take that call. They have MLAs, no disrespect to the staff, because I have a piece coming out in the Cape Breton Post later today, and in Capers for Healthcare, you might have seen my write-up. My wife had 30 minutes to get the blood test for very important tests, troponins, gas, bloods, all these health things. Now they send an MLA there. She calls a taxi from Glace Bay. The Glace Bay taxi comes over, picks up the sample in New Waterford, takes it back to Glace Bay for testing. North Sydney Hospital is doing the same thing. After 7 o'clock, lab assistants go in, collect the blood, send a call a taxi from Sydney. Now, my wife had to be there within 30 minutes because of the acute care. It could be 2 to 3 hours for these tests. That's the quality of healthcare we have under the new CEC. It's not working. You guys are looking to expand it. And what Dr. Littlejohn wanted to do a month ago, guys, if you're diabetic, you have heart problems, no problem under the new CEC model. Start exercising, get some professional help, change your diet. He wants the brick and mortar of this community tore down these hospitals in favor of 1,000 healthcare professionals from all over the province and all working for you, all doctors and nurses and psychologists and everything else. Guys, I'll keep it polite and cordial because I'm glad you just came out to speak to these people. You two people are the swing vote here that can change all this for the people who voted you in. And I'm going to tell you something. You better listen because there's some angry people there and they're trying to be very polite. To be honest with you.
So again, look, thanks for that, and I know the frustrations in Waterford, the north side, and in Glace Bay, and I said it, I don't want to be repeating myself here, but it's what I hear every day, every single day, without
exception.
That's the thing, guys. As an MLA, as a guy from here, as a human being for us, we wanted make it better overnight, immediately.
When the Premier wants you to pass another bill, the other thing, guys, the health of Halifax is young and vibrant. And it's moving forward. We have old retired people, okay? We need healthcare more now than we ever needed before. The demographics in Halifax do not reflect our community in the rural areas. And you two guys can stand up to the Premier and say, you know what? He wants you in next 4 years and wants to be a minister. He's grooming you. He's grooming you to be the next Premier of this province. Listen, the rumor around town, but the voters in your community, and I'm from New Waterford, we're speaking loudly. Don't pass the next bill that's going to bring detriment to our communities. Plain and simple.
We need some ideas.
And the people in the healthcare, they're scared to death to talk out in fear of retribution. They're scared to death.
There was a letter yesterday in the Post, I forget which doctor said, Jeff, that they'll maybe get a university here in Cape Breton to start training the doctors. What do you feel about that?
I think it's a great idea. Again, here's the challenges for me, and this is what I know would be frustrating for you if I'm on the other side of it. I don't know the ins and outs of that. To think that we would be training doctors and having a residency program at CBU is a mind-blowing thing. Because to this lady here, and this is no secret, it was Leo Glavine and Randy.
I have a question for both of you.
Can I just finish here one second, though? I can't fathom how if we can't handpick a medical student who's from Nova Scotia to set aside a different process and path for them to become medical doctors here. It just, I know it's Canadian medical.
Yeah, and it's Canadian. I know, and yeah.
I remember 1995. I took a bus up to Halifax. We stood on the steps of the Halifax Parliament building.
Right.
And we argued about the losses to the healthcare system in Nova Scotia, and especially here in Cape Breton. That was in 1997.
That was the gutting
of the healthcare system. Okay. They were cutting nurses, they were cutting hospital beds, they were cutting everything, and they blamed it on the transfer payments that were coming from the government at the time. But anyway, here we are, 20-some years later, we're going through the same thing. Now, like I said, Jeff, I'm not here because I dislike you. I'm here because I'm a demographic representative of the group of people that live here on this island, that I'm going to be looking for a health care system 5 years down the road. God bless me if it takes that long. Yeah. I hope it does.
Yeah.
And there's going to be nothing there for me. Yeah. I had to get an ultrasound on my arm not too long ago. They said it was going to take me a year. This gentleman here just said in the past, just a few minutes ago, that the two members of this here Cape Breton Island are you and Derek Mumbercat.
Yeah.
The two of you hold the balance of power in Halifax. Now, if you're quite happy with going down with the ship,
I know, but it's always personal. I'm getting up in age
and everybody here is in the same demographic group. We're all getting older. We all need a healthcare system that we can depend on. The people out there that haven't got a car when they're told to go to Sydney to go to how are they going to get there? They can't afford to pay $25 for a taxi to get there, $25 to get back.
Right.
You're closing in the Waterford, you're closing in the North Sydney Hospital with no plan in place. If there's a plan in place, we would love to see it.
So the plan in place for the community.
I'm not here to dump on you.
No, but that's what it is.
If you would stand up for the people of Cape Breton, the
Did they stand up before? They never stood up for you, for us. Your municipality, your representation, you're doing terrible. You guys ain't taking care of your guys that voted you in.
I mean, in ways, I try health care and other things, too. I really do. It's not
you can't sit back and let a premier scuttle out of Ireland, and that's what he's doing.
But it's not that I'm not trying or that I don't care, that I'm not sort of making...
Well, how come we don't hear nothing over the news about you guys hacking to the premier?
It wouldn't be really covered.
It would be really helpful for us.
No, covered. So they're not going to, they don't ask me if I talk to them. Talk to the premier every day.
Every day.
But this is the issue. It's not a
How come you guys don't get together with them?
We do.
Well, how come we don't hear nothing about it?
I don't know. You're hearing now, I guess. This is the purpose of today.
It's a very sad team. But we got to go in there and wait for you guys to come out here and talk to us.
Right, yeah.
Okay, you know how many people are dying in this island?
Yeah.
The island itself is dying.
Yeah.
You took everything out. You took the coal mines out, steel plant out, heavy wire plant out. You took everything out. What do we got? Nothing.
I don't know.
We got nothing. Tell me what we got.
I have a question for you, the two of you. Derek, you're not talking a whole lot today. You're my elected MLA.
Sure.
I'm from Sydney.
Yep.
This affects everybody.
Yep.
Tammy Martin the other day in the NDP had a press conference. I was part of it. I'm the president of the paramedics union for the province. Are you guys going to sign the declaration that the NDP signed for health care and keeping the hospitals open?
No.
Thank you.
I believe in the new plan to revamp the hospitals.
I have a follow-up question.
That's really important. Can I talk to you? So that the real issue, I really believe, and again, so and what if someone believes that this infrastructure change with all four hospitals is going to work or not, and that's a debate we can have. I think it's the best thing we can do for recruiting.
Lisa Bond is a member of Capers for Healthcare and was one of the protest organizers. Donnie Antle spoke to her.
I've been involved with protests for healthcare for a few years now, earlier through a group called Save Our Services, and we ended up dissolving when the hospital closures were announced. At the same time, five of us came together to form Capers for Healthcare to fight back.
And, of course, the first things you guys did is you held some town hall meetings.
We did.
Sort of get a general sense of how people felt about healthcare in Cape Breton. And what were your impressions at those town hall meetings?
The people are really angry. They feel like they're not being listened to. And understandably, we're not. Our doctors aren't being listened to. The citizens aren't being listened to.
And, of course, the one big news story from Capers for Healthcare back in November, of course, was the March on the Causeway. Were you able to participate in that?
Yes. It was fantastic.
You've also met and you've spoken with doctors and nurses and paramedics. What sense do you get from them as to the state of healthcare in Cape Breton?
It is a crisis. It's most definitely a crisis. Anytime you talk to any of them, they'll tell you we need urgent help. It's not we need a plan going forward. We need a fix right now.
And you've also spoken with patients and residents about their experiences with healthcare as well. What sort of stories are you hearing from people about their healthcare experience?
Most people tell me the doctors are amazing. The nurses are amazing. The wait times, however, are pathetic. Most people don't have access to a doctor. We're lacking a lot of the specialists. I'm actually, as I'm talking to you, I'm in my car on the way to Halifax because my son has to see a specialist at the IWK. We don't have enough of anything.
Anything serious? Obviously serious.
It could
enough.
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're checking for a genetic disease that's affecting his heart.
Okay, and we should have doctors here that can run those tests.
Yes, he should be able to go to the regional. That was the purpose of the regional being built. It wasn't built to replace Northside General and New Waterford. It was built so that we had a center so people didn't have to travel.
And that seems to be the main problem with the closures of Northside and New Waterford is that now you have people that live on the Northside that are having to travel quite a distance, really, in order to get health care now.
Yes. So, when you're looking at people that are coming from even like Bullandry, they'll try to tell us McNeil will try and spout, well, it's three hospitals, four hospitals within a 30-minute distance. But if you already live 25 minutes to a half hour from Northside General, and that's the distance you're used to driving, and then you're tacking on another half hour onto that, then you're over an hour from any kind of emergency care.
So you bring up Stephen McNeil, so I'm going to ask you about this, because you've also, you've had a chance to speak to, you know, the Minister of Health, Randy DeLore. You've spoken now with Jeff McClellan and Derek Mumbercat, other MLAs. How satisfied are you with the response that you've been getting in those discussions?
Not at all. Randy DeLore is not fit to do his job. He doesn't know what he's doing. Jeff and Derek are spouting liberal talking points. It's infuriating to speak to any of them. We were told yesterday by Derek, and it makes no sense. First, he said that he had no idea what the plan was, and there were studies being done, and they were still trying to figure it out. This was when we were in his office locked in, so nobody else could get in with police on either side of the door. Then when we went outside, he said, I trust the plan. So, well, what plan do you trust, Buzz? Nobody knows the plan. Randy DeLore told me he doesn't know the plan. So they came down here. They announced that they're going to close. They got everything in an uproar. It's no wonder people are upset. And I know emotions get a hold of people, and you end up with cursing and screaming, and nobody wants to hear that. But when you push people to a breaking point, they're going to break. We've got no answers yet other than, well, studies, and we're speaking with people, and they're not. They're not speaking to any of the people who are important. They're not speaking to the doctors. They're not listening to the doctors. They're not speaking to the people who are actually using the services.
And
they're sitting in a room talking to each other, as far as I can tell.
Have you had a chance to speak with anybody from the Nova Scotia Health Authority?
The last conversation I had with anybody from the Health Authority was the week of April 30th last year, I was recovering from surgery, and I spent a lot of time making phone calls and emails and the works. And I had somebody from the health authority call me and tell me to stop fear-mongering. And Northside General was not going to be closed. And there was no need of me telling anybody that.
Now, I do want to ask you, because there are people that do say that that we aren't we're in a serious situation, but not in a crisis yet. There's numbers thrown around about the percentage of residents that have access to a family doctor. And here in Nova Scotia, it's about 5.6% don't have a family doctor. Ontario is 10% don't have a family doctor. BC, it's 18%. The national average is 14.9 as of 2014. So what do you say to those people that say there isn't a crisis?
I believe they're twisting the numbers. There's a lot of people who don't have doctors who haven't even bothered to register. I've spoke to them. They've said, what's the point? I'll be sitting on a waiting list for 5 years. And to dare say that we're not in a crisis when there's people being treated in bathrooms, when you have doctors coming out saying that people are dying, that people are dying due to the lack of health care, the doctors are saying this. There's no way this isn't a crisis.
What do you see as the most pressing issue facing our health care system?
It would be split between emergency room closures and the lack of primary care. They go hand in hand. You get overcrowding at the regional. Some of the people that are there don't necessarily need an emergency room, but they don't have a family doctor to go to either, so their kid has an ear infection. Technically, it's not an emergency. They end up in the emergency room because, well, they're not going to sit home and wait until the kid's eardrum ruptures. If they had a family doctor to go to, that wouldn't be an issue. They'd get an appointment and they would go in. But we also have ambulances that are lined up outside of the regional because all the other emergency rooms are closed. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other.
So the group Capers for Healthcare, you've had protests, you rallied outside the hospital, there's been town hall meetings. What's the next action for Capers for Healthcare?
We will be planning more sit-ins, and we're hoping, it's early discussion right now, of another bus trip, but going all the way to legislature.
Political scientist Jim Guy was one of the more than 100 people at the healthcare protest at Jeff McClellan's office. Dave DeVoe spoke to Guy on the healthcare situation in Cape Breton and its political implications.
You were at the protest at Jeff McClellan's office last week. You appeared to concur with a lot of what the protesters were saying. What drew you to that protest?
Well, I was there really to observe, basically because I do some writing for the Cape Breton Post and other magazine or other newspapers, and so I'm frequently asked opinions on what's going on in the province. So I wanted to be there for that, and I probably look like I was very actively involved. I was just really listening. And I did make a few comments, I think, to people who were there.
So could you break down those comments? What did you say to Jeff McClellan, and why?
Oh, well, I went into his office, and I wanted to point out to him, because I know Jeff, and I know Derek Mumberkett. They were students, so I knew them over a long period of time. I wanted to point out to him that. That it's important for him to tell his boss, which is probably very difficult for him to do, that he's looking at the wrong deficit. He's focused on the wrong deficit, and that deficit, avoiding a deficit for the province is probably the wrong way to go in dealing with health care. You're going to have to spend more money to bring this up to scratch. And so I asked him, I said, if you want to see where the real deficit is, just look outside your office. And he, of course, he heard what I said, but but he wasn't going to, you know, rush to Halifax and talk to Stephen McNeil.
So could you unpack that? I guess what you're trying to say is that you want him to look at the deficit as being more than just in traditional accounting terms, but also in health and human life. Is that sort of what you're getting at? Or?
Well, if you look at the focus of this government from day one, it's been never to fall into deficit. And so that means that all budgets, all departments, are rigorously scrutinized to not overspend their, you know, their particular budgets, notwithstanding whatever emergency should crop up. And the one budget where an emergency is very likely to crop up is healthcare. And so, the premier keeps a very, very large thumb on that department to make sure that things don't go out of whack as far as he's concerned.
Okay, so, I mean, you're essentially saying what the NDP has been saying, which is that you can't fix this system. Assuming there's a problem, you can't fix it on a balanced budget. Now, the Tories and the Liberals appear to disagree on this, and one of the arguments they make is that, yes, there's a deficit in a wider sense that you identified now, but if we just kick the can down the road and keep spending, that's just going to mean more cuts later as we service the debt, and even the wider deficit that you identified now will be greater later if we have to kick that can down the road. What do you say to that view?
Well, there is some truth in that. I mean, it could very well amount to, for a resolution of health care, it could very well amount to a reorganization or a restructuring. We don't have much representation in terms of health care. It's all been reduced basically to one. And so we have, we have very little representation to feed back what the issues are. And when I was in Jeff's office, there was a woman crying there about her 14-year-old son who has pretty dangerous diagnosis. And how else is that information going to be transmitted to the decision makers who can change the reality? It's going to take spending to change this reality. It's going to take, I don't know how much spending, but it's going to take more willingness to spend money to deal with the problems as they occur.
But again, wouldn't the spending just put off the problem, as the argument goes, and make it worse in the future?
Well, I have no way of being absolutely sure of that. But I would say that if you're going to attract medical doctors here, you're going to, if you compare us to Ontario, compare us to New Brunswick, compare us to BC, we're way behind. And so you're going to have to pay medical doctors. That's going to cost more money. You're going to have to pay per service. When you get a family doctor sitting in his office, it's going to cost you a lot more money for that person to treat the person he's treating. And so when you multiply that by the more than 1,000 doctors that operate as family doctors across the province, then it's going to impact on the provincial budget. So, kicking it down the line, things will change if you spend more money attracting doctors.
So you think there's a way to do this whereby some long-term changes can be made so that the effects down the line aren't as bad and that the long-term outlook will be better and it's not just a Band-Aid solution?
Well, essentially, if we have a shortage of doctors, as everyone is saying, and we do, like my son's a doctor, so I know about the ground-level issue that happens here, you've got to deal with it from the point of view of how you make doctors at Dalhousie University. And you also have to deal with it from the point of view of how you attract doctors. Doctors will come if they know, they'll be able to make a living here as doctors. And so we are way behind. It is embarrassing for people to talk to doctors in Ontario about what they're making here. And what we should be doing is making ourselves a lot more attractive. And it's going to cost money, but it's not going to put us all in debt. It's something that we could do pretty quickly to change the general opinion of what it's like to practice here in Nova Scotia.
It's not going to put us in debt. It's going to put us in deficit, which will add to the debt, wouldn't it?
Well, it may put us in deficit. I mean, I'm sure there's a whole bunch of things happening in government in addition to what goes on in healthcare. I mean, government is an amalgam of many different spending operations. So that could all be looked at, too. We have 11 degree-granting institutions. The province spends about $400 million on universities. I'm not saying we should spend less, but I'm saying that there's more than healthcare that spends money against the provincial budget.
What about this notion coming from some progressive conservatives to whom I've talked, that the idea is that the real problem, the root of the problem, is not money. The root of the problem is bureaucracy, specifically having to do with the amalgamation of the health boards and a lack of local control. Do you think that has just as much factor weight, as a political scientist would say, as the money issue?
Well, whether it stops at not spending more money is something that has to really be looked at and analyzed. And I don't see how we're going to be able to resolve this issue without spending more money within the budget of healthcare. That's almost a certainty. From that point of view, I would disagree. I mean, I know that is a conservative position, that a reorganization, a restructuring, a different way of approaching healthcare may be the resolve. But we don't know that for sure, and they don't know it for sure. So we're at the exact same point that they're criticizing, which is if you spend more money, you may not be resolving the problem. You're just kicking the can down the hall.
Okay, so, I mean, you seem to be confident that that's not going to be the case. I'm still not sure what the source of that confidence is.
What's the confidence about?
About the kicking the can down the road might not be, or we might not end up doing that we might end up solving the problems just with money and not necessarily with reorganization.
Oh, I wouldn't say we shouldn't reorganize. I think when we reduced the number of health boards across the province, it was a serious pivotal mistake. and it's only, we now know it's a major problem. Whether the government will admit it is quite another matter. But we now lack representation, and the information that is transmitted back to us from the boards is usually wrong. So there has been a garbling that took place, and what the premier would have to do is reset the healthcare authorities across the province. So, and it may be that he has to reset all of them again. I think having one of them representing Nova Scotia or representing Cape Breton has just proved to be a failure.
Well, can you give some examples of where information has been wrong in terms of information being transmitted?
Well, I know that the operations of emergency departments is simply not being realized. Like the information is being transmitted to the people in the board, but it's not being realized how serious it is. And so when you have that kind of numbness or that, the approach is to ignore the problem by not hearing the emergency aspect of the problem, then you're going to make things a lot worse. And so that way it's going to require taking a penetrating glance at the operation of emergency departments across the province.
There's been some suggestion on the government side that, I don't know if they said that critics are overstating the case, but they certainly took issue with some of the comments, like Dr. Jeannie Ferguson, who talked about third world conditions. But, I mean, whether or not there's hyperbole there or not, some people on the government side have said, yes, there are challenges, but there are also some encouraging signs, such as the claim, for example, that the percentage of people in the eastern zone with a family doctor is the highest in the province. What do you say to that kind of talking point?
I'm trying to think of it from the point of view of operating on a daily basis on the ground level as a medical doctor and walking into the hospital and seeing beds stacked against the wall waiting to get into emergency. And some doctors have complained about the fact that some of these beds have been put in different parts of the hospital. That there's something glaringly obvious happening that we're ignoring. And so when it comes to healthcare as an issue, it's not like other issues. Healthcare is not like dealing with teachers, dealing with labor. It's not like dealing with business organizations or even universities or labor organizations. Healthcare is a universal issue. It affects all of us. And even if we're healthy, young and healthy people, we could very well become sick tomorrow or require serious medical attention tomorrow. And so when you're looking at the healthcare system from that perspective, are you going to be worried? You're going to be concerned that, you know, that maybe what people are saying about this healthcare system is not hyperbole. Maybe it's true.
Okay. I'll go on a related issue here. I know people at the protest last week and for a long time since June have been talking about the impending closure of the New Waterford and Northside hospitals. There seems to be some consensus among the commentariat that's overblown and it's being politicized. How do you feel about that move to close those two hospitals? Has it contributed to the problem, or has that been overblown a bit, as some claim?
I don't know if I could answer that. I think, there is a fallback on that, too, that they're not just closing all medical services in the north side and the other communities. There's a fallback on that.
But there's no ERs, which has drawn some objections.
And that is a concern. I mean, that should be a concern. So is there a way of ameliorating that particular recommendation by having an emergency service closer to the north side, like where the north side is what I mean to say. Sustaining the emergency infrastructure there, so that the concern about the failure of an emergency situation wouldn't happen.
So, what about the idea that they're expanding? Well, they are planning to expand the regional and the Glace Bay ER. Does that not seem like a step in the right direction, as long term as it may be?
Yeah, it would to me, except that. And I'm sure it is to others as well, but there are doctors who are concerned about that because they see the nuance, they see the complications, they see the intricacies of operating without an emergency service, for example, on the north side.
So what would some of those nuances be that maybe haven't been well communicated, perhaps?
Well, I suppose, the speed with which people can be treated, the availability of space, all of these would somehow crop up as concerns. And when you're in an emergency situation, they're all rather significant. So they would have to be looked at, I would think. I am not experienced in setting up healthcare in a province. I'm a political scientist, and I look at the political variables that go into the decisions about different government policies. But when it comes to this one, I can understand why the public is concerned. Some would say over-concerned, but I can understand why the public is concerned, because they feel how vacuous it can become very quickly, and especially in your life, your personal life. Healthcare in the 1960s, when it all started, there were lots of promises and guarantees that were made. And I'm sure if you were to measure the consequences of what's going on here now against those promises, you'd see that we haven't really kept up with what we promised we would do.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, about the larger issue of public health care, because I think you're in perhaps some position to compare the U.S. and Canadian systems. I know locally, Dr. Harry Pollitt, for example, has suggested that the problems we're experiencing are symptomatic of a bigger problem with public health care. And he and some other conservative critics of the system have suggested that we'd be better off by privatizing. Maybe more people would go bankrupt like they do in the U.S. system, but the argument is, you know, people are better bankrupt than dead. So if that's the case, why not just privatize it? Is that the answer to the problem?
Well, I lived in the United States. I lived in New York City. I studied there. I lived in Kentucky. And I lived in Missouri, where my wife has worked at hospitals in the United States. And she saw the absolute negative consequence of not being able to afford medical services when you need them. She saw people being turned away, and there were recommendations that were made that they would go to a state hospital, but they couldn't get there. And it just was like the failure of the humane character of our healthcare system is that you will get taken care of at some point. Now, we've been stumbling on that point. We've not been able to do it very well in emergency, and we're complaining about it. But by and large, if you are sick and sick in an emergency situation, chances are you're going to be dealt with.
Yeah, I know some people, like some of the right-wing think tanks in the States, say that it's a myth that people die because of the healthcare system in the U.S., that people rarely get turned away. It's just that they go bankrupt. And again, you know, better bankrupt than dead, I guess, is the argument. Do you think it's a myth that people don't die because of the system? Or?
Well, I would think that if you looked at it from the whole country, there are people that will die. There are people who are poor in the United States to a very serious extent. And they're treated as undesirables, and when they bang up to a hospital, they're looked upon as, we don't want to deal with these people; they should go somewhere else. And it's unfortunate. One would think that like American history has always kind of focused on the ordinary guy, that the ordinary person being able to pull up their bootstraps and survive. But when you look at the situation in the United States, you see that a lot of people are left to fall under the bus or to fall through the cracks.
So
if I were to compare the United States system to ours, I mean, I'm fortunate to be a guy who can get medical advice pretty good. But I wouldn't want to be stuck living in a city like St. Louis where I lived, or Louisville, Kentucky where I lived, or New York City where I lived, and have to have serious medical attention at a reasonable cost. It ain't going to happen.
So you don't think wait times and deaths due to wait times can be minimized or prevented by privatization in Canada? Is that what I hear you saying?
Well, I hope that we stick to the mantra of public medicine, and we're already falling down on that. In British Columbia, I have a sister-in-law who lives in British Columbia who has to, I have brother-in-law who lives in Montreal. I have family who live in Montreal, and they're paying extra money to get the medical attention. And so it's a slippery slope to fall out of the publicly funded system and then to slip into a private or semi-private system, which ultimately, if you look down the road, is likely to happen.
What about a sort of more middle-of-the-road approach like some of the European countries where there's universal coverage, but there's both substantial public and private regimes? There's some people that have suggested that those systems work better, and they seem to do better on most OECD and other international measures. Would that be a viable way to go? Or?
Well, I suppose what might be unrealistic is for someone who can afford, someone who can afford to have, the medical costs can be paid for to some extent, and then to opt for an entirely public system that drains itself of its own money and its own opportunity because everybody is coming to it. So so there's got to be a way of rationalizing, you know, medical services so that we can all gain those services and afford to gain them. In the 1960s, Tommy Douglas didn't see it that way. Tommy Douglas believed that, you know, that we owe it on a humane basis and on an economic basis to all of ourselves. We owe health care. It is a responsibility. It is a right to go for health advice and to go for health services, and to do so at public cost.
But if that right can't be met by a public system, wouldn't the logical consequence be a private one instead?
Or partly private, yeah. It would seem to be from an economic point of view. I mean, but then if we really had the political will that we desire, you know, we could afford the system. It would require us to pay more taxes. It would require us to bang into deficits and to add to debt. Yeah, it would. Almost inevitably, it would.
So it's more of a moral imperative, in your view, than
yeah,
an economic...
Yeah, you know, that might be quite unrealistic in today's world. The world has changed. I've taught at universities for over 40 years, so I understand that I've been through a totally different universe, political universe on healthcare. So you know, we have to change with the times. But can we change with the times without major consequence, without serious consequence, without people dying, without people getting sicker than they should be?
So I guess.
You know, I mean, I firmly believe in pharmacy being covered. But can we afford to do that? And there are people that I work with at the university who strongly advocate that tuitions be free. But can we afford that? You know, at some point we have to take pretty serious penetrating glance at our ability to pay for our humanity.
So it's sort of a values question that's popping up, that maybe people have to decide how much they want to balance the considerations of paying more taxes versus losing the system. Do you think that maybe people aren't being told that they have to balance those two things?
I think conversations are too short about these issues. I think people are asked a question, you know, about, you know, whether you think the university system is failing or the healthcare system is failing, and you get a 30-second response, and that's the answer. But it isn't. The answer is far more complex. You need more time. You need to lock people, to sit them down, and to explain the way you're explaining to me. Well, do you think that this is another way of looking at this problem? You have to have that when you're making a decision. A discussion. Otherwise, the conversation won't be very reasonable or won't be very significant.
Now, finally, I just want to get your insight as a political scientist on what's happening in Cape Breton, because, you know, doubtless no politician wants to see the kind of protests that appeared before Mr. McClellan's office. Obviously, he's a cabinet minister. Mr. Mumbercat is a cabinet minister. Does this bode well for the Liberals' fortune in the next election, or will this sort of be just a flash in the pan?
Well, if I were both of those members, they're both cabinet members, I'd be concerned. Because in a campaign, just having another option could be enough to slip your support away. So, you know, the Progressive Conservatives aren't going to change that much in healthcare. They're going to look at things from a different perspective. Will that be enough? Nobody knows. But if they offer that as a campaign option, there will be people who will say, you know what, I think the Liberals have had enough chance with this. This issue is getting worse rather than getting better, so I'm going to vote for the NDP or I'm going to vote for the Conservatives. And that's, unfortunately, the nature of politics. It's not a very thoughtful process. It's not a very efficient process. And some would say it's not even a good process, but it's what happens to us in our political system. Well, I think I agree with you that there's got to be more discussion. There's got, And one of the things I would suggest is that this government should pay a lot more attention to doctors for advice. These are the people who deal with it every single day. Talk to nurses, nurse practitioners, hospital administrators. We only hear from these people, you know, they only use the tweet system, the tweeting system. They will only tweet their responses to an issue. And so we basically get their impressions that way, whereas we should be talking to them weekly to deal with the problems that we face in healthcare, because they're the ones who know. They're the ground-level people.
Speaking of hearing from doctors, the subject came up at the most recent meeting of the legislature's new health committee. Progressive Conservative MLA Carla McFarlane suggested Dr. Jeannie McGilvary appear as a witness. McGilvary recently resigned from her post as a surgeon at St. Martha's Regional Hospital in Antigonish. McGilvary says part of the reason for her leaving is the difficulty achieving a work-life balance.
I think there's a lot of physicians in Nova Scotia that have fear. Fear of speaking up and telling their truth. Their truth of their experience, of the working conditions they live in day out, day in, 24/7. We have an individual, Dr. Jeannie McGilvary, who has enough. She's courageous, she's brave in wanting to come forward to share her story so that we can look at the gaps and challenges that have been created by all governments over decades. We're all at fault. And having Dr. Jeannie McGilvary, who wants to come forward and be able to speak about those conditions, then enables us to look at those challenges and gaps that she's willing to share. Because often we see physicians leaving this province, and we do not have any type of exit interviews. I had a family doctor in Pictou who left 2 years ago for Ontario, and a year later receives a thank you note from NSHA for his service. Why was there no exit interview? Having Dr. Jeannie McGilvary come in and having her be brave and courageous enough to come in and speak to us is extremely, well, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. And I hope that everyone will look at this as we came in to this committee, this new committee, that we're trying to ensure that is nonpartisan. It has to be so that we can find out what the solutions are in moving forward. So on that note, I just hope that everyone takes a moment and thinks about how important it is to have her come in and tell her story. She's not just the only witness for that day if we're able to have that topic go forward. So on that note, I just want to say please reconsider. It's extremely important to have her in.
NDP members on the Health Committee backed the PC motion to have McGilvary appear as a witness, but the Liberal majority on the committee voted it down. And that's our show for today. If you have any comments on items we aired or interview suggestions, you can contact us at info@coastalradio.ca. Thanks for listening. For Dialogue, I'm Bobby Knock.